Well, folks, this is Carl Blair with the Stuck Mike Avcast, recording for Sun and Fun Radio, and today I'm here at the Women's Air Service Pilots Luncheon and Panel Discussion. We're going to be starting here shortly, and let me have the moderator take it away.
If you can all have a seat, we'll get started, and we can do photography and autographs after our symposium.
All right. I don't think someone's sitting there. Someone's sitting behind me. Sorry.
Welcome. It's an honor to have these wonderful ladies here today, and I'm a stand-in for Ursula Davidson, so I haven't had much preparation to do this, but Nancy asked me to do it, so I will. And anyway, I would like to introduce these ladies, and also my co-founder, Bob Ohl. He's going to assist me with moderating this, since he has a depth of knowledge of history, so I'll have him fill in. But anyway, first of all, I would like to introduce, I'll start at the very end, Barry Smith. And her photograph, her World War II era photograph, is on the end. And Barry was born in Chittenango. Okay, I'll get that right one day. New York.
And river flowing north.
I'm going to let her go in a moment. Barry heard about the WASP program from her brother, and she had two brothers, and they were both Army Air Corps pilots. And so anyway, she worked as a secretary to raise money to take training, and I believe she even hitchhiked to the airfield to take her training. But she was accepted into class 44-6, and after graduation, she was assigned to Blackland Army Air Force Base. And there she was a multi-engine test pilot, and she flew the AT-10 and the UC-78. And she'll tell the rest of her story later. And next to Barry, we have Dorothy McCowan. And Dora began flying in the civilian pilot training program. And I believe many of our WASP started in this program before they suspended the program after a while. But she took this program when she was at the Northwestern University in the summer of 1940. And she was accepted into the third WASP class, which was 43-3, and received her WASP wings at Avenger Field in 1944. And Dora was stationed in a variety of bases, including Love Field in Dallas, Texas, Camp Davis in North Carolina, Fort Stewart in Georgia, Camp Edwards at Cape Cod, Massachusetts, Eglin Field, Florida, Grand Island Army Airfield, Grand Island, Nebraska, and Wendover Army Airfield in Utah, in addition to flying primary and advanced training aircraft that were flown by most of the ladies on our panel. She also flew the C-47, B-25, B-34, B-17, among others, many others. And most notably, Dora was one of two WASP that were recruited and trained by Colonel Paul Tibbetts to fly the B-29 as demonstration pilots, and Bob gave you the background earlier. And there were only two women in history checked out in a B-29, but there are two women right now at Sun and Fun currently training to fly the B-29 through the Commemorative Air Force. And they'll carry the torch and preserve this legacy. And so anyway, we're very happy that she's here. And the other WASP that flew the B-29 was Dee Dee Mormon. So anyway, we're very happy Dora's here today. Next to Dora, we have Penny Halberg. And Penny was born in Kansas City, Missouri, and grew up in Los Angeles, California. She started flying in 1943 and learned in Cubs and Taylor Crafts and Travel Airs. And I'll quote Penny, "in all the small rickety planes of the era." And I own one of those. I own an L4J Grasshopper, so it's one of those rickety planes. Penny was accepted into the WASP training program in January of 1944, and she was assigned to class 44-6, and she was one of Barry's class. After her graduation in August 1944, she was assigned to Gardner Field in Taft, California, where she was an engineering test pilot along with Faring Aircraft. And Barry has, Penny has some good stories about her training. It was quite challenging for her to get to the airfield to complete her training and become a WASP. I'll let you let her tell that story. The next lady who I've just met and I don't know well, and I'm embarrassed to say I do not have her bio, is Marguerite Bernhardt. And Marguerite, could you share with us a little bit about your background, when you started flying, and when you were accepted into the WASP program, and what class you were in?
I was in class 44W3 and went down in there in 1944, but I started 13 when I built model airplanes, and then at 16 the government put on for boys a good, excellent ground school, and they took me in as the only girl, but it was well worth it. And I did Civil Air Patrol when I was working to get my pilot's license. We had to have hours to get in, and it's just a wonderful experience for all of us.
Thank you, Marguerite. I'm glad you're here today. And first of all, and I'll ask our panelists just to keep our answers, you know, under 10 minutes, you know, 5 minutes, since we have four, but then we want everyone to have a chance to speak. And I'm talking to Barry. Barry has great stories.
Once I get started, I can't stop.
I know, we'll have to rein her in. But Barry, tell us a little bit about you starting flying. I know your brothers introduced you to the WASP program. Tell us about the early days when you first started your flight training, what you flew in, and the challenges of learning to become, you know, get
well,
your hours.
When my brother wrote to me, he was already in the Army Air Corps. He wrote to me in September of 42. He said, "You better learn to fly. They're taking women into the Army Air Corps for the first time. But you've got to have 35 hours of flying time." So right away I called an airport, they signed an instructor, I took a bus there and let me off of the bus, and it was a 4 mile walk to the airport. And of course I started walking, but I hitchhiked. I didn't have to raise my skirt or anything. I just could walk along and look at the car and they'd stop because it was wilderness out there. So I had my I was making $25 a week, and the flying lessons were $14.50 an hour dual, so that took a little over half of my pay, and I didn't have a car or any money. So by the time I could take 1 hour a week, because the lessons were $14.50, so then after I soloed, I decided to move to a little airport only 8 miles east of Chittenango, and that way I could stand in my house, in front of my house, and hitchhike to the airport, and that's what I did. I had every week I could take one lesson, and pretty soon after I had 20 hours, my instructor said, "I just got a job testing radar," whatever that was, at the GE plant in Syracuse, New York. And he said, "I'll give you the job and you'll get the free flying time," and he would get the money. So that was perfect, because we had to have 35 hours of flying time to be interviewed. So I would hitchhike down there, walk a half a mile to the airport, get in my little plane, fly it to Syracuse, about 40 miles, and there were hundreds of factories there. I don't know how I found that one. Fly 3 hours back and forth, back and forth, then fly back to the Canastota Airport, hike down to the highway and hitchhike home. And that was my Saturday. And pretty soon I had 35 hours, and I found out I had to be interviewed in New York City. I came from a little town of 900 people, and I'd never been to New York before, but I took a train there and I found where I had to be interviewed. And they interviewed me and accepted me right away, and they interviewed 25,000 women. They accepted 1,830, and eventually 1,074 of us got our wings. The rest washed out because they could not fly precision flying.
Thank you very much, Barry.
Is it time for me to stop?
Yep.
We'll be back to you. And Dora, yeah. And I know you were in college when you started flying in the civilian pilot training program. What inspired you to start flying? And tell us about the early airplanes you flew when you were in your doing your training.
Well, it's a long ways to remember. I remember as a child when I lived in Long Island, New York, near Roosevelt Field, and we used to watch the airplanes. So I think those early years were imprinted on my mind and made me want to learn to fly. I learned to fly on a civilian pilot training program at Northwestern University. Flying was given at a local airport on the north side of Chicago. Shortly after that, I joined the WASP program, and that was a life-changing experience, as you probably all know. I towed targets for the anti-aircraft. These were beginning gunners. Beginning gunners don't shoot as straight as they should. See these gray hairs? I was at Camp Davis for almost a year, and then went to Camp Stewart where they were beginning the drone program, fly small unpiloted aircraft in front of the guns, and then the pilot aircraft hopefully was above the guns, not in front of them. And hopefully the gunners were shooting as they should, straight. After that, I had the unusual experience of, I was sent to Grand Island, Nebraska, to be a service pilot. And I met a man who later dropped the first atomic bomb, General Paul Tibbets. And he was in charge of the flying at Wendover. And I was eventually transferred to Wendover and flew there until the WASP program was over. I better stop because I could go on forever.
We'll come back to you too, Dora. Penny, I know your early days were very challenging. You were very motivated to want to fly and to become a WASP. So please tell us a little bit about those days and the rickety airplanes you flew.
Well, I think a lot of us learned in those rickety airplanes, both because that's all there was. I started taking lessons and lived in Los Angeles. The closest we could airport we could fly at was Blythe, California, right near the Arizona border. So a bunch of us would drive starting Saturday night at midnight, and we would drive all night long and arrive about early in the morning on Sunday. Then we all get our 1 hour flight in, and in late afternoon we'd start back to Los Angeles, arrive about midnight. And I did this for several weeks and decided that I really wasn't going to get much time earning, 1 hour a week. So I went to the airport and we worked out a deal, and I went to work there. They had a little gas station and all these rickety planes. So the gas station, little cafe. So I made sandwiches, served beer, I pumped gas, I worked on airplanes, and I got an hour's flight time a day. So I built up my time pretty quickly. I had 80 hours when I went into the WASP. I was stationed at Gardner Field, California, and where some of the women had said that they were disliked by the men, and we were welcomed with open arms. I can't imagine anyone being nicer to us than the men we flew with. They were all great. There were only a couple of instances where somebody was rude because I was a woman. And so I had a very good experience. And when we were disbanded in December, I look back on it and I think, well, where else could we have gotten all that flying time and the wonderful experience of flying military aircraft? So rather than being bitter about being disbanded, of course, I was disappointed, but I just think we were lucky to have been able to fly. And so the pleasure was all ours.
Thank you, Penny. Marguerite, tell us about your early days. What inspired you to fly and what you flew in, the types of planes, and where you were during that time? And where you heard about it and where you flew, how long it took to get your training, and what you were doing while you were earning your hours or building time.
Well, I grew up in Connecticut and I flew there, and I had started real young, and I went to Bradley International and worked on T-47s, and I was in insurance to make money. Insurance company to pay for my lessons, as most of us did, a lesson and then work a week and another lesson. And there's a small airplane dirt runway near me where we had the Civil Air Patrol, and most of us were flying then. And Mom heard about the WASP on the radio. So we went up and had an interview, and I was very fortunate to be one of the chosen, and I was thrilled about that. Even my mom and dad were glad about it. And so I went down to Sweetwater, and if you've seen pictures of it in the beginning, it just was barren with the just the hangar there. Few airplanes sitting around, but we were so thrilled to be there. And my job was mainly instrument work, which when I got it through my head, I thoroughly loved, but it baffled me for a while. And so we felt pleased to do it. And I for one, didn't think anything of being sent home. I was just happy that I had flown and done what we did.
Thank you. Thank you, Marguerite. Barry, back to you. Would you tell us some of the challenges you had during your training and after you graduated and got your wings and went on to your base, some challenging moments or that occurred in your flying during that time?
I didn't have any challenges. I did whatever they told me. Anyway, after I got my wings, I reported to Blackland Army Air Force Base, Waco, Texas. And of course, we had to pay for our transportation every place. And I reported, there were four hangars on my base and four WASP. And I was assigned to the number one hangar, which was the biggest and the busiest, luckily. And so I reported to the captain of the hangar the next morning after I arrived there, and I said, "Sir, I'm reporting for duty as your new test pilot." And he said, "Jesus Christ." And I said, "No, Barry Vincent." And that laugh, everybody. And so right away he got a twin engine airplane. And an instructor and a parachute for me. They took me up and they gave me 3 hours of duel. And then he said, "I've taught you all I know about this airplane. You're a test pilot." Well, later I thought, why does it take the men 5 months to learn to fly this airplane? And I'm a test pilot in 3 hours. Oh, well, I can do it. So we came in for a landing, and I went into the hangar, and I talked to every mechanic there for hours. And the next morning I came down, and there were eight AT-10s, twin engine advanced trainers, be tested, and I tested every one of them, just as if I knew what I was doing. And I did. And that's what I did every day, all day long. And sometimes I would have to fly other people someplace or go and get something. But a month after I'd been there, my captain said to me, I'm going to give you a twin-engine airplane to fly anywhere you want to. You could stop at any base in the United States, fill up with fuel, sign your name. Now, nobody knew we were civilians flying military aircraft, and we didn't tell anybody. So I had a wonderful time flying and testing every minute.
Thank you, Barry.
I loved every minute.
Dora, I have a question. Could you tell us about the day that Colonel Paul Tibbetts invited you to train with him on the B-29? How did that come about? And let me ask you, was Dee Dee in your class? Were you at the same base together, or were you based at different places? Dee Dee Mormon, the other
B-29. No, Dee Dee was in the class behind me. I was at Wendover, Utah, Garden Spot of America, when they asked me to go do this. And Dee and I checked out. It was a very easy airplane to fly. You tend to think that a four-engine airplane and a girl pilot don't go together, but they do. It doesn't really matter how many engines a girl can fly as well as a guy.
Is there any part of it you found challenging as far as like your size? And you're a small person, and the B-29 is awfully big. Were there any logistical challenges in the cockpit?
No, you mean physical strength? No, I don't remember any. And I'm not particularly a strong person. I'm just sort of average.
Thank you very much. Penny. Penny, I wanted to ask you, tell us a little bit about your training at Avenger Field, and then when you were at your base, the type of work you did and any challenges that you had. It sounds like you didn't suffer the discrimination that some of the WASP told me they did, you know, being a lady pilot. So I'm curious what your experience was overall during the WASP program and after you graduated and won your wings.
Well, after graduation, I was sent to